Welcome to Frontiers Radio, and thanks for joining us today. I'm going to deviate from the usual episodes because I want to pay tribute to a very special person, a psychologist, a real eminent psychologist by the name of K. Anders Ericsson, who has passed away on June 17, 2020. Came as a big surprise, as I know my colleague Scott Miller just did an interview with him a couple of weeks ago, and we'll put that on the link as well in the ICCE YouTube website. You could find that as well, an interview by Scott Miller with K. Anders Ericsson. But I want to also take this time to honor him. When I first met Ericsson, it was in Kansas City, of all places in the United States. That was in 2010, my first time in U.S. as well. And it was at the Achieving Clinical Excellence Conference. Meeting him was highly anticipated because I know of his work, especially his 1993 paper together with two of his other colleagues on the study of expertise with musicians. And much more that was published after that. So highly anticipated. And truth be told, he turned out to literally be a real towering figure. He's really tall, and for an Asian, I'm not considered short, but he has got huge presence. And when he spoke at that conference, it really had a profound impact. In a blog that I talked about this, I described this in the Frontiers website, that it was truly a spiritual moment for me. It was without exaggeration. And I'll share with you later on in today's episode a poem. You know, I'm not one to read spoken word poem, but maybe this is relevant here. And I will read something that inspired me profoundly. And that impact was not just that meeting. And we had many conversations as we were beginning to study the domain of deliberate practice in our field in psychotherapy, which led me to go back to do a doctoral program, leave Singapore, my home country, moved to Australia, where my wife and I packed our bags and came to Perth to do this 3-4 year long meditation on this topic. But it was somewhere near the end of the conference that he said something to me that still sustains and warms my heart. He said that, "Daryl, you know, if you ever need anything, please don't be afraid to just email me. And if you have any questions or anything, just drop me an email." I couldn't believe it, to be honest. I mean, that he was so open. I mean, who am I? I was just someone who was interested in this topic, and many people have been interested in this topic. So, and it was not only that. Even in correspondence, he responded really warmly and really supportive, because I was in a land of doubt. You know, other than Scott Miller, who has been my mentor, at that time, you know, he really supported me, and we had no idea what we were trying to do, even designing the protocol for the studies. I would have to email him back and forth to ask him what he thought and try to read as much as I can. And he was always welcoming, always supportive. I'm also glad, my co-authors and I are also glad, Scott Miller and Mark Hubble, that Ericsson wrote the foreword to a book, and we also dedicated Better Results, our latest book, to K. Anders Ericsson. And I'm going to read to you what he wrote for us in the Better Results foreword. "Most of us want to be actively engaged in our work and lives. Psychotherapists are uniquely prepared to help when psychological difficulties and personal issues interfere with that objective. All such practitioners undergo extensive training and engage in continuous professional development to maximize their ability to deliver the requisite expertise. How psychotherapists develop and what can they do to improve are the subject of this book. Although specific to psychotherapy, the research and training methods described apply across many helping professions, medicine, counseling and teaching, and labeling those who use them to achieve better results. Some of the material presented in this volume is based on research my colleagues and I conducted over the past 4 decades. We were particularly interested in understanding how elite musicians, chess masters, and Olympic-level athletes did what they did. Reaching world-class performance levels and managing to continuously improve. For me, and that is Erickson, for me, interest in the subject of expertise and expert performance started early. In high school, I wanted to become a nuclear physicist to solve the energy problems of the future. To achieve my objective, I studied the biographies of famous scientists, thinking that if I learned what they did, it might help me succeed. From my extensive reading, I concluded a key to success was finding a big question, the answer to which would make a big difference. I also decided that whatever subject I choose to pursue, it would have to be something I was genuinely interested in. Otherwise, it would not be possible to sustain the deep interest necessary to last a lifetime. Motivation, I came to understand, was critical, as many well-known scientists encountered challenges, roadblocks, and long periods of failure before achieving success. This latter recognition ultimately caused me to abandon training as a nuclear physicist and pursue psychology instead. Not surprisingly, perhaps, my initial research focused on understanding how people think when solving problems. I developed a scientific protocol, a method known as Think Aloud, whereby, as the name implies, subjects shared their thoughts openly as they engage in different tasks. While my colleagues and I started with college students, in time, we turned our attention to expert performers. We were especially interested in highly motivated individuals, those who wanted to go beyond their current level of performance in their domain of expertise. Along the way, there has been starts and stops, reviews and revisions. At the same time, our understanding of the development of expertise and achievement of expert performance has increased dramatically. In 2010, I was contacted by Scott Miller, who was organizing an international conference for psychotherapists. He wondered if I would be willing to talk about how our research on chess masters, elite athletes, and outstanding musicians might apply to the professional development of psychotherapists. I agreed, knowing that at that point that no direct research, and only one article written by him and colleagues had been published on this subject in our field. When we met at the conference, I was immediately struck by his and the attendees' enthusiasm. This was a group that wanted to improve. I was also impressed by their willingness to do the hard work and research needed to translate our finding for psychotherapy. Scott had already developed an empirically sound method for measuring therapists' clinical work. As seen in the pages of this volume, having valid and reliable tool for assessing performance is a critical first step to improving performance. Together with Daryl Chow, Scott was beginning to study clinicians with superior outcomes essential for understanding the specific variables associated with better results in any given performance domain. Everyone I met was deeply committed to helping students and experienced professionals alike to improve their outcomes. Let me just take a pause from this forward. You know, as I heard him speak at the conferences, we talked, what struck me was this duality. He had a really sharp mind and a really warm and open heart. That truly was my felt experience just speaking with him and getting to know him. And as well, we met a couple more years after that. And again, amidst all the emails and correspondence. But back to the forward. 10 years on, their work continues. Reading better results, I was amazed by the progress. You can feel the excitement in these pages. While reading, I was frequently reminded of the passion and sense of adventure I've experienced in my own research career. One of the absolute high points, for example, occurred when I worked as a postdoctoral fellow with two famous cognitive psychologists, Herbert Simon and Bill Chase, at Carnegie Mellon University. The year was 1978. And just to give you context, again, breaking away from the foreword, 1978 was the year that I was born. That's 42 years ago. Wow. Okay, but anyway, back to the forward. And here's Erickson. I was in San Antonio, Texas with Bill for the annual meeting of the Psychonomics Society. He was at the front of the room presenting findings of our research on training memory performance. At the time, the capacity of short-term memory was believed to be fixed. Presented with one digit at a time, it appeared most adults topped out at around 7 random digits. The world record performance on this task was held by a mathematics professor who was able to repeat back 18 digits correctly. Bill showed a graph of one of the participants in our research, a college student named Steve Falloon. In the first trial, Steve, or SF as he was known in our published article in the prestigious journal Science, performed like most adults, recalling 7 digits. Over a series of testing sessions, however, his performance improved, surpassing not only the assumed limit, but the world record. As recounted in my co-authored book, Peak, Secrets from the New Science of Expertise, with a few 100 hours of training, Steve was eventually able to recall sequences of more than 80 randomly presented digits. Other subjects, with one eventually managing to recall over 100 digits. Most memorable to me were the surprise and excitement in the audience. To be sure, some doubted the findings. Others suggested we merely lucked out, recruiting a naturally gifted person. A few accepted the results but questioned their significance. I remember one well-known cognitive scientist asking, "Who cares about improving one's memories for random digits?" Still, many were and have remained interested, in particular about the changes in SF's thought processes that accompanied his progress. The most general insight emerging from this research was that ability could be significantly extended by presenting tasks just beyond an individual's performance level, giving immediate feedback and then allowing time to reflect and problem solve before proceeding with further attempts to improve. In time, we would call this process purposeful practice. When a teacher and a coach agreed to monitor and guide each individual trainee to engage in particular training tasks, the improvement were greater and more predictable. This type of training we termed deliberate practice. Over the years, I've met people who think our research shows anyone can achieve anything. Even some researchers appear to believe that this is our perspective. Nothing can be further from the truth. What we actually found is scientific evidence about how some achieve amazing results. A map, so to speak, of the types of training, activities, and encoding memory methods that others can follow to obtain similar specific exceptional performances. Of note is the word specific in the previous sentence. One critical finding from our studies is that expertise is domain specific. Participants in our digit span studies, for example, did not exhibit superior memories on other seemingly related tasks, such as recalling letters and geometric symbols. Nonetheless, the general principle remains true. To improve memory processes, mental representations, and expanded working memory have to be developed for each particular skill domain. Decades later, numerous studies conducted by different researchers document that engagement in extended practice tailored to the specific task and individual learner can lead to improvement across a wide range of human activities, including music, ballet, gymnastics, chess, the word game Scrabble, radiology, and education. To be sure, some remain skeptical. I've met experienced professionals from a variety of performance domains, for instance, who seriously doubt their ability to improve meaningfully beyond their present level. When asked, many say they have reached a limit determined by their unique inheritance of genes. It's a compelling notion despite an overall lack of empirical support for such constraints on increases in expert performance. Indeed, recent studies of middle-aged identical twins provide compelling evidence of the diverse outcomes that can be achieved with an identical set of genes when the twins pursue dissimilar developmental paths and engage in different amounts of practice. Rather than engage in abstract arguments about the role genetics may or may not play in the development of expertise, what I've found most helpful in addressing skepticism is showing what the best performers in the same domain actually do to improve and excel. That's precisely the approach taken in Better Results. Its publication at this time heralds, I believe, a major change in the conception and implementation of training of beginning therapists, and perhaps even more impactful change in the methods used to ensure continued refinement of experienced therapists' performance throughout their entire careers. It clearly shows that a given clinician's performance is not the result of some inherent, immutable limit on their ability to succeed, but is a function of methods they use to train and develop. Most important of all, it provides therapists with the means for delivering more effective care. That's the Forward by K. Anders Ericsson. Conradi, eminent scholar and professor of psychology in the Department of Psychology at Florida State University. I remember that feeling of speaking with Ericsson. Often when I speak with him, it always leaves me with a feeling of possibility, that it's possible that if we could figure out each of our own zone of proximal development, as Vygotsky would put it, if we can figure out our growth edge, we can start to move the needle, start to move inch by inch to get better each step of the way. And, you know, he's right. There has been contention about this topic. And, you know, we have also written a study looking at some reanalysis about some meta-analysis that was done about the impact of deliberate practice on performance in various domains. Still, the conversation continues. But I think for me, what it serves for us in our field in psychotherapy is to start to think about what Ericsson says, how we can reimagine the way we continue our development and our training. Next, I want to read to you a piece from K. Anders Ericsson based on a chapter he wrote for an edited book. And in here, in this 2009 chapter, he addresses something that I feel that we really need to pay attention to. And this is what he says. Most professionals, such as doctors, nurses, stockbrokers, and accountants, do not receive the constant pressure from performing in front of an audience of paying tickets holders like actors, musicians, and athletes. The lack of scrutiny and perhaps feedback may be an important difference that explains why many doctors do not spontaneously adopt the best practice methods for treating their patients and spend a rather modest amount of time engaged in deliberate practice and effortful training to improve and maintain the skills. The greatest obstacle for deliberate practice during work is the lack of immediate objective feedback. So to me, you know, what Keonis Erickson is saying there has got so much implications, not just for feedback, but also about how we are approaching the practice of psychotherapy. I mean, just think about this. A client comes in distress. They walk into our office, we see them and we talk to them under the confines of this office space. And naturally so, privacy and confidentiality is primary, but everything happens within this veil, this closed door that we cannot examine, cannot figure out a way how to improve. And we need this feedback loop. We need to be able to take the feedback so that we can feed it forward into each of our development, which is why we need to figure out a way to learn deeply by de-privatizing this process and also figuring out channels where we can work and refine our skill, the craft of the conversational nature of psychotherapy. So one last thing, you know, this is a poem that I wrote. I was from Kansas City, you know, I moved to LA before flying back home to Western Australia. And by that time, even though I was in Los Angeles, I really didn't want to go out. I was just in my room. I was just so tired in a good way, but I just wanted to rest in my room. And I ended up writing this poem. And this was dated 23rd October 2010. And in this poem, I'm looking at the page now. It's actually dedicated to Dr. Keonis Erickson. So here's his piece. How will you spend your time to feed your heart and give your mind? How will you give your smile and all of your time? Let these eyes burn in the passion of awe and wonder, a taste beyond the taste on your lips, in transcendental consequence. In this body song, the world plays for you. In a dance and in a trance, you always be held close to the heartbeat that drums for you. Let the children be in their becoming. Let the children be in their becoming. Let creations sing until the unending. So to on this end, his family and loved ones, my condolences to you. And Erickson, thank you for this honor and thank you for this impact that you have that's rippling through. Thanks for joining us.